Hello.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to the Over the Monster podcast. This is episode, I believe, 123. I'm Matt Corey. Nowhere in the cat box, but close to the cat. You're live in Portland, Oregon. I say live, me live, not you live. You're listening, not live. You can even rewind this and hear me say live again. That's not live. This is. I am with a former co-host and Mark Normandin. Mark, the internet. Mark, how are you? How are you doing, Mark Normandin?
I'm probably spending time and space based on that intro.
Yeah, That's about right. Is that comfortable? Is that uncomfortable?
I don't know. It seems a lot smaller.
Nebulous suspension of time and space.
Not really sure what it entails.
All right, so we'll get into it. Later, but let's do Red Sox. What
that makes sense.
What do you think about? Yeah,
I mean,
all right.
Podcasts and everything.
True. Stop clogging inbox. Stupid fantasy sports. Okay. So I think a couple things to discuss. We're recording this on Tuesday, April 14th. And I mention that because if you listen to this in 4 days, the Red Sox may be in a completely different position than they are right now. look at a 5-2 record, and you go, "Yay, Red Sox 5-2! They win all the time, barely ever lose."
Say, who is that an impression of?
It's me. I don't know. Anyway,
how'd you get this job?
I don't get paid for it. That's how it is.
That's right.
That's why I write like a million other places. Anyway, skipping over that, the Red Sox are 5-2, and that looks wonderful on paper. But it's also 7 games into a 162-game season. They will go 5-2 again in a 7-game stretch. We'll probably go 2-5 in a 7-game stretch.
Someone's going to respond. They're going to respond to this, like, 7 months from now. Never 5-2 again in any 7-game stretch.
Right.
Lied. You guys suck. So it's 6-1, but 4-3 more.
No one's going to do it because no one's going to actually take the time to listen to this month and then go back to baseball reference. I trust the internet, Mark.
That was the beginning of the end.
That was something no one has ever said before. Or at least not while they were on at least 3 or 4 intoxicants. I think that it's worth discussing, as we said earlier before we started this podcast, I think it's worth discussing the rotation and how things have looked, because that is a thing that people were flipping about. Flipping in a sort of negative way, not like doing backflips in happiness. They were flipping over scariness of potential bad pitching. This is also how I write. And so how has the Red Sox looked, starting rotation looked compared to your expectations, I think is an important thing. And I recognize that I'm talking to you and not, Sully from Southie. But still, compared to your
Sully from Southie is a large component of our
I got nothing against them. I'm just talking about you and your expectations for the starting pitching staff.
I'm pretty good about the staff. I didn't think they're all the pitch well. I thought they had in
well they have
their histories. Yeah, well, you know, I didn't think anyone was going to pitch well. But you have to pitch well to win the game.
This is and money for my talkings.
That first turn of the rotation for everyone, with things looking good. Marcello had one bad hit that made him unfully. And everyone remembers that, but that's because they were laughing about his contract instead of paying attention to the fact that he gave up 3 runs over 6 innings. You know, Buckholz's opening day start was fantastic. He looked like he had everything together. Wade Miley reminded people that, you know, pitchers can work fast and well, and that's allowed in Boston. Joe Kelly was probably the biggest surprise. I mean, he's going to have starts like that sometimes, but he's also going to have plenty of starts where he doesn't work out of those jams he creates for himself. And he wastes a few too many pitches, and he only lasts five innings, that sort of thing. But, you know, as far as expected performances go, you knew you were going to get some Joe Kelly starts like that. It's the ones that make everyone think he's going to be better than he probably is. Did I leave anybody out? Masterson. And Masterson, you know, we knew he was going to be good so long as he's feeling good. If he's healthy, you know, he's great. He's Justin Masterson. He was in line for the kind of deal that Porcello just signed with the Red Sox prior to last year's disaster, which was caused by, you know, a bum knee and the awful mechanics that came up from it.
Yeah. So I'm gonna play a little devil's advocate and bring up that that Porcello has Porcello Porcello. I'll never get
it's Porcello.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, I thought it. I always called him that, and I thought it wasn't. And then I switched to the other one, being like, "Oh no, people are gonna hear me say his name out loud." No, it's actually what I thought it was.
On Baseball Reference now to confirm it's Porcello.
Now, dude, Viras is wrong about names and stuff like that.
No, never.
That's true.
I'm going to say their way, and you say your way, and that'll be fine. Anyway, Rick. Let's call him Rick, because we can agree on that. where did my stats go? There they are. So, Rick gave up three homers, or has given up three homers in two starts, could easily be four if Mookie Betts hadn't done his little Superman routine where he jumps up into the air and brings back home runs over the wall. I mean, I think the end result, even with the home runs, is still good enough, you know, with the Red Sox offense. But I think we're hoping for a little bit more.
Are we really going to criticize a guy for a couple of April homers and two starts?
Well, like, yeah, because that's all we have right now. So that I'm not.
Well, don't you? That doesn't mean you use it. Come on. We're better than that.
Stop it. We're talking about how they've done in the first time through the rotation. So, yeah, I mean, if he gives up, you know, four homers or two homers a start for the rest of the season, he's not going to be very good, and he can, you know. We know that already. We knew that before he even pitched. But he's faced two offenses which don't project to be very good. And he's faced those two offenses in two offense-friendly parks.
Wait, did you just say face the best team in baseball who doesn't have a good lineup? Is that...
What?
The Nationals?
Oh, no, wait. I was thinking against the Yankees.
No, that was Kelly.
Right, okay.
Yeah, no, Porcello faced that whole, like, preseason favorite as of a week ago that got Jason Worth back yesterday.
Right, yeah, no, he pitched against the Phillies and the Nationals. Okay. Yeah, I think the Nationals' offense is probably league average. I don't think it's a whole lot better than that. Do you?
Sorry, I'm busy staring a hole through you right now. Yeah, I mean they're not perfect, but they have a pretty good offense. I just wouldn't say that they have a weak offense. Come on.
No, they don't have. I misspoke. No, I was thinking that he faced the Yankees,
That's fair.
But I was wrong. So in any case, he still gave up three homers. Could have been four. The strikeouts are not high, but I guess we knew that going in.
Yeah, they're never going to be high.
Even with you know, the sort of renewed focus on the curveball, you don't think that there's a league average strikeout?
It's not a thing that he's going to do.
No? Okay.
It's not the kind of pitcher he is.
Okay. Through those same two starts, the hits are super low, and the walks are pretty low too. So those are two good things. And the overall has been fine, right?
Yeah, you're the one trying to say that we should be worried about a guy that is doing fine.
No, I wasn't saying we should be worried. I was pointing out he gave up a lot of home. He's given up a lot of home runs so far. He has. That's wrong.
Two games.
But you know, the overall, you know, the totality of what he's done has been, you know, roughly league average. So that is That is what has happened. Right?
I'm sorry. I'm waiting for a stronger devil's advocate point of view. Come on.
His name is pronounced Porcello.
There you go. That is the most controversial thing you have said so far.
Is he...
We're at that point in the season when almost any argument that's made, I'm just going to go, okay, it's been two games.
I'm realizing that.
I'm just stonewall in April. Just, no, whatever.
Okay,
April.
So let's move on from Porcello for a second then, and let's go to Joe Kelly, Cy Young candidate. Okay.
Yes, self-proclaimed Cy Young winner, Joe Kelly.
Exactly. So Kelly, like Buchholz looked in his first start, Kelly looked fantastic. He looked in control. He had all his pitches working. You know, there was few walks, a lot of strikeouts, and
none of those pesky homers you were.
Yeah, no home runs.
None of them.
No.
Best pitcher ever.
Where is a home run? But yeah, no home runs. That's right. Yeah, he and Miley and Masterson, no home runs allowed in their first starts. And we will see how long that lasts for. but. And I don't have ground balls ahead in front of me, but Kelly is somewhat of a ground baller. Let me ask.
Yeah, they're all going to be about half of their balls in play are going to be grounders.
Okay.
You know, give or take a couple.
Did anything about Kelly's start other than, you know, the sort of spectacular results surprise you? I mean, was there anything about him that was, you know, different than last year or
no? Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, like, he has games like this.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them he works out of those jams that he gets himself into, and other times he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
This was one of those ones where he did. And, you know, he wasn't facing the greatest lineup in the world.
That always helps.
Especially, that was the Saturday game, right? The night after the 19 inning.
Yes.
So it was even weaker than usual. But, you know, this is what you want him to do. He's going to have great games sometimes, and you're going to think, oh, he's even better than we thought he was. And then he'll have the inning, you know, we'll go 4 2/3 innings, and he'll walk too many guys, and he won't be able to get those strikeouts that helped him out of the binds on other times. And you'll remember, oh, but he's a back-end guy. Right.
So
this was just one of the, like, high-end results for him. But, well, you know, at some point we're going to see the other side of it.
You're not buying Joe Kelly Cy Young candidate.
No, I mean, that would be an amazing thing to be wrong about, and I don't think anyone would blame me for it. And I would certainly enjoy that ride.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not exactly standing in line to buy a ticket for it either.
Okay. I mean, the thing that's easy to notice about Joe Kelly, and so I will note it, is the velocity in the fastball.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, 96... I think he averaged 96 on that's what Fangraphs has on.
Oh, he can bring it. It's just not a very deceptive fastball. So
yeah.
You throw it enough times in a straight line, straightish line, a little too high up in the zone.
Well, that's the thing. I thought he did a pretty good job. And I'm going by memory. I don't have the Brooks. I should bring up Brooks while I'm talking to you.
That won't take long and be cumbersome.
but I thought he did a good job of keeping the ball down in the zone. And that's actually something Buchholz did in his first start. He did a pretty good job of keeping the ball down in the zone, putting a lot of balls down almost into the dirt. And then against the Yankees, that didn't happen. The ball was up a lot up. And yeah, it's hard, especially I think in Yankee Stadium to live up in the zone.
Yeah, especially with the lineup set up the way it is. But yeah, it's the kind of start that we'll love to see Joe Kelly do it. But I'm sure from a perspective of people continuing to yell at us about how he's a breakout waiting to happen or like he's some young kid, it's going to annoy us, you know. He's the same guy he's been, which is good. Like, I like Joe Kelly. You know, it's nothing like that. But he's 27. We pretty much know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if he's probably one of the guys who could get pushed out of the way for a prospect next year, unless he has a surprisingly good year, which would be great because having lots of options is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, well, he's the guy that would have got sent to the pen had they made a bid for Hamels or for me home against him. So overall, it seems to me like the and we'll move on, I guess, change topics after this, but to me anyway, I think the even the Bolts performance against the Yankees.
Mitch, I mean, you know it's going to happen with any of these guys at some point, and not just these ones, like pretty much any pitcher.
Well, that was, yes, true.
I mean, hell, Clayton Kershaw had a, you know, he's had awful spots. And
start. I mean, still, that was a particularly horrific start. I think we should.
Oh yeah.
We should give him credit for that though.
But it's the kind where, like, next time he could come out and do his usual thing, and everyone will forget about it. Well, not everyone. I shouldn't say that because there are people who still are mad at him for like a lower from 2009. They never forget. But man, there's a study that a lot of people just hate political air and really see what makes them tick, and then maybe drop them on an island somewhere.
that's a lot of people. I think it'd be a pretty island. That island would be North America. I looked at Kelly's strikeout count from his start on the 11th against the Yankees, and Pierce was not misremembering. He did a pretty good job of keeping pitches down. There are a lot of pitches below the zone, a lot of pitches down in the zone, and very few in the upper parts of the zone, very few above the zone. And I'm going to guess at least some fair percentage of those pitches were on purpose. You know, get a guy 0-2 and you want to get him to chase. So anyway, the famous Jason Varitek 8 feet over the strike zone on 0-2. That's so predictable. Where Varitek stands up. Yeah. Anyway. So I think, and what I was going to say before, it feels to me even like, even with the Buckles start, that was really bad. It's like the start rotation has overachieved a little bit compared to my expectations. At least this first 1.5 runs through the order. Does that fit with what you thought or not really?
Yeah, well, you know, as I was saying all winter, the whole rotation of the guys who could be great. I mean, well, I don't think Joe Kelly's going to be great, but I think he could be great at his job for, you know, what he is as a back-end guy. But
best fifth starter ever.
Yeah, but, you know, I had told you and argued with you multiple times about Wade Miley's the kind of guy who I think he has the track record and the stuff to be a solid number two kind of guy. I think Porcello's the same kind of guy. I think Masterson's that kind of guy. One start does not confirm that is who they are. But it's nice to see.
Yeah.
And Buchholz, as much as everyone rips on him and as inconsistent as he's been, if he's healthy for 170 innings, they're probably going to be really good. I don't know if they'll actually be ace innings or whatever. He's not the guy you're going to depend on for 220 innings, but you don't necessarily need that either. You just need to get to the playoffs and have four guys who are good ready to go then.
Yeah.
So maybe one of these guys drops off after a little bit. Maybe their second run through is almost all terrible. I don't know. There's definitely risk for, you know, there's room for disaster for all of them, which was kind of the real problem and why not everyone had confidence in them. But if they're all pretty good all season long, it's not going to surprise me because I wrote that is a possibility on a number of occasions.
Right. So,
of course, I had to say it on multiple occasions because no one believed it. Over and over.
Well, you have a track record of
you know, charge of a site.
Yeah, Mr. Blogger Man.
Stuff all day long, year after year.
Let me ask you if you, without looking at the standings, can correctly identify two teams. One is the team with the best record in baseball. The other is the
Royals.
Okay, good. The other is the team with the most runs scored in baseball.
Are they the same team? What?
52. The Royals have scored 52 runs.
Oh my God, that's, I don't know, that's runs, whatever.
Yeah, you know, seven games. But
remember last year when they didn't hit a home run until like August?
I do remember that.
I think that's accurate. I'm off by a few weeks maybe, but pretty sure that's okay.
There are that was funny. I'm moving past it, but it was funny. There are two teams with 51 runs scored. One of the Tigers, it seemed collectively written off, and the Tigers are 6-1.
Well, that's why they're 6-1. They can't score 52.
That's right. That's
so
right. They're
try harder, Tigers.
They're not championship caliber.
No. When are they ever?
No. Well, that's actually true. the Tigers have scored 51, and the other team that has scored 51, do you have any guesses, Mark?
Rockies.
The Minnesota Twins is wrong.
Really?
Is wrong. No, it's,
yeah, I was going to say, I'm like, wait, aren't we making fun of them?
The Twins scored 16 runs. That's
because they're
actually true.
Frank was supposed to be hitting.
Yeah.
And again, you know, hey, it's a week, but it's just one funny thing. It's like, the Twins is a little. Maybe they did okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now they're not good at the thing they're good at.
No, this is actually my hitless comment that hit list on Sunday is about this team, the Oakland A's, who lead baseball in runs scored by teams that are not used to wins. So, yeah. I think that should be a separate category because facing the Twins is just a
good.
Tremendous advantage. It gets bad.
So, you know.
It's true. Can the skew results in the early season. That's more or less the rotation. I mean, I'm, you know, it's seven games again. Who the heck knows? Injuries, and on and on and on with the possible things that could happen. But my overall impression is that the Red Sox should get enough league average or slightly above pitching with this group to have their offense play up. And I think, you know, a league average or slightly above defense to help it. Overall, I remain optimistic about this team. I don't think they're a 98 win team. They're not a 700 winning percentage team, but
I don't think anyone needs to be in the AL this year.
Yeah. So they're, you know, I think, you know, provided that they're relatively healthy, I think the thing that I'm most optimistic about so far, is only not that good, but it's seeing Dustin Pedroia turn on some high and inside pitches.
It's nice to see people even forgot that they shouldn't give him those.
Yeah, I mean, well, he was missing them last year. I wrote these reports sometime last July or something. It was mid season. And, you know, just looking at his and then, you know, what he was not doing. And it's those up and in pitches that he just kind of turns on and jacks. I mean, the ones are, you know, at his eye level almost. He shoots them for the monster. And he was not doing that. And he did do it in spring training. And then he did it on opening day. That was very promising. And, you know, those are the only two homers he has so far. In fact, he only has one other extra base hit. But I remain optimistic about him overall.
He's usually a pretty relatively slow starter anyway. You know, he kind of hits a stride around June, late May, and then you kind of know what kind of Pedroia season you're going to get.
Mm-hmm. Is there anybody who sort of stands out to you their early performance as I don't know, probably incorrectly confirming something you were hoping would happen?
No, I mean, it's hard to say anything over, you know, it's like Shane Victorino's not hitting, but he hasn't looked bad in the process, and we get a reminder of just how good defensively he is in right field.
Yeah.
And he's really good out there. There's no one really struggling to the point where you're concerned about them, or, you know, not after a week, and no one hitting so well that you're like, oh, well, enjoy this while it lasts or whatever. Everything's just kind of coming along, and I just kind of figure, sure, that's what, you know, talk about the pitching and where the pitching needs to be. Pitch just okay, you know, not bad, not great. Pitching is okay, and they hit like they are capable of hitting.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. They're going to win a ton of games. They might have the best lineup in baseball, and if things go the right way.
Okay, so let's conclusions.
If things go their way, you know, it might be the best base lineup in baseball by a long shot. That doesn't necessarily mean they'll be the best team, because, again, the pitching needs to keep pace to a degree, but they can be good without the pitching being good.
Mm-hmm.
A few guys in the lineup do need to start hitting, but, again, you know, it's April 14th as of this recording. I'll get really nervous about guys' lines in another 2 months. I don't know.
So
probably not even then, depending on who it is.
Yeah, I think it depends on who it is. I mean, if Mike, you know, if Mike Napoli is hitting .083 in 2 months, that'll probably be a problem.
You know, if you've got Ryan Hannigan's not hitting, oh wow, who knew that was going to happen?
Right.
And even if like Mookie Betts isn't tearing it up in 2 months, like, well, sure, that's fine. It's his first full season in the majors, and people know more about him this year than last year. And how he hits at the end of the year is really more important in the long run for him than, you know, what he's doing in April. So that being said, it's been pretty exciting so far, even though he's hitting like .233.
Yeah, and humorously enough, is second on the team in strikeouts.
Yeah, it's going to take some time to get used to the tricks of the major league guys. You know, he didn't spend a ton of time in AAA.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't need it.
Right.
But one of the things that takes away is you don't get that repetition against some pitches that you're not seeing in AA, that you're not seeing in high A.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to learn on the job, and it's going to result in a lot of strikeouts. And it's going to be how he comes back from those strikeouts that'll kind of define his season. You know, Bogaerts last year really had trouble. He didn't really adjust until the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
No one was watching the Red Sox at that point, but you know, he had a pretty good September.
Well, at least two people were.
Yeah, he had a pretty good September, and you know, he's looked good to start this year, and he's looked more confident playing short too, which is good.
Yep.
He doesn't look like a guy who is afraid that he's going to lose the position the second he has a misstep.
Well, he's got two errors, so
yeah. But he just looks smoother. You know, he looks more like he knows what he's doing at the position, and that's a big deal.
Yeah, he made a play the other day, a ground ball behind second base almost. Not quite behind second base, but mm-hmm. A little bit to the shortstop side, where he was shaded that way anyway, so it wasn't like he had amazing range. But he moved over, fielded the ball really smoothly, and mm-hmm. made a good throw. And I remember seeing that and thinking, hey, that's good. That can work, you know.
And it's going to be important.
He doesn't need to be
with the pitching staff,
Dustin Pedroia. He doesn't need to be, you know.
Yeah.
Jose Iglesias. I mean, it would be nice if he was, but he doesn't need to be.
He just needs to be okay. And part of being there's kind of two reasons it's important that he is a decent defensive shortstop. It's because of that ground ball centric pitching staff.
Yep.
And because if Bogaerts' bat does take a little more time to get going, and again, he's 22. Like, he's allowed.
Yeah.
He's 22, right?
He's 22. Yep.
Yeah. So he's still 22 years old. Like, it's okay if he doesn't hit 300, 400, 500. You know, that's not...
Right.
You know, Bryce Harper is ridiculous and has so much potential and is in his fourth year in the majors, and he's not doing that. And we still love him and his future and all that. Like, it doesn't have to happen
actually
all at once.
I mean,
so,
I agree completely with what you're saying, but there's a lot of people who are down on Bryce Harper, and I find it hilarious.
Well, yeah, but they're morons.
Oh, okay. Well, there you are.
Like, just... straight up, you know, like, wow, you're comparing, oh, Bryce Harper's not Mike Trout. Wow, neither is literally everyone else who has ever played baseball, possibly.
Yeah,
so,
it's that's a really good point, actually, because people compared Mike Trout to Mickey Mantle, but maybe it's, well, I guess if Mickey Mantle hadn't, you know, had a severe alcohol problem and also blown his knees out, maybe that would be a better comp. But as long as Trout stays healthy.
Yeah, you know, and even if he doesn't, like, you can go, that is the greatest baseball player who has ever played. Like, not career numbers or whatever at the end, just talks in terms of, like, guy who stood on a field and played baseball that we get to watch.
Right.
And whatever horrible thing happened to make that stop happen. But, yeah, like, that's the kind of player you're talking about with Trout. So,
at this moment,
you know, Harper,
yeah.
Harper's the kind of guy where it's like, oh, no,
yeah,
maybe he'll only be one of the 25 best players ever when his 21-year career ends.
Yeah. Fun when he signs with the Yankees, won't it?
So, you know, if Bogart's bat doesn't all come together at once, it's fine, especially if he's decent enough at short, because it'll help make up for the bat, while the bats also help make up for the glove a little bit.
Yeah.
And it helps the pitching staff out, which is, with the direction they've gone with all these contracts they've been handing out to the ground ball guys,
yeah,
that's going to matter now. It's going to matter later. So getting Bogart's in a position, you know, let him field short now. If you can't do it in a couple years, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
They are certainly building up enough options in the minors to take care of that. And his bat can go somewhere else at that point. But, yeah, I feel good. I feel good about the young guys. I feel good about the old guys. Lineup feels good.
Go ahead, sorry.
I said the lineup feels good.
Good, yeah. Good. It's good. Yeah, about Bogart, I have noticed a tremendous number of his hits are bloopy, accidental hits. like the triple he hit was not well hit at all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's going to happen when you're hitting 400, too. Like,
yeah,
it's just,
yeah, exactly.
Part of the process.
He's got 13 hits. He leads the Red Sox in hits. And he's got two extra base hits, and I think one of those is pretty fluky. I don't know. I don't remember what the double is, but I feel like that might be fluky, too. But of all the people that hit into some luck this season, I have to say he would have been a guy that I would have picked as maybe him or even Betts. Although it watching Betts, sometimes it doesn't seem like he needs any luck, but yeah, just for Xander to get his feet underneath him a little bit after what happened last year. I think it can't help the young guys, or it can't hurt the young guys' confidence, to hit into a little bit of BABIP luck and start off strong. Get the fans behind him a little bit too. I guess maybe one of the soft factors that it's hard to say how much impact that really has. From watching baseball, for a long time, you do realize that these guys are human and they are aware of, when the fans are behind them and when they're not. And I think it probably impacts it a little bit,
yeah,
for a younger guy.
So. It probably helps. It's not his team yet. It's not his and Mookie's team.
Right.
This is still Ortiz's and Pedroia's team, and, assorted other veteran. So it's nice that, and it's a little more so than last year, now that they've got Hanley and Sandoval in the lineup.
Yeah.
You don't have to rely on the kids as much, so it's good that they're kind of doing this balancing act of, we're playing a win, but we're also setting up, for greatness in 2017 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So that's got to help, because, man, Bogarts was hitting a little higher in the lineup at the start of last year, and everyone wanted to hit even higher. I mean, Betts is a little, he's a leadoff hitter, so obviously they believe in him a little more as far as immediate production goes. But,
well, that's actually a good question, because given what the Red Sox have been through with young guys over the last couple of years, and the struggles that some of their young players have exhibited coming up, and taking on regular roles, it is a little bit surprising. Now, Betts is not that guy, and you take guys individually for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's at least an argument to be made that, you're almost asking for trouble, by putting Betts first in the lineup and, depending on him to that extent.
I think one huge difference with him and Bogarts specifically is, Bogarts had never failed at the minor league level before. He had never dealt with, not being amazing, basically.
Right.
It just never happened. So he came up to the majors and he didn't handle it as well as, you wanted him to. And he seems to have moved past that, which is great. Just like listening to him talk and seeing him in interviews and everything, he seems much more like confident in that things are going to be okay than he was during a time last year. But Betts is a guy who already went through a portion of his career where he was just a guy, just failing to hit. And even that's just kind of like the, I don't know, maybe, if things turn around for him. So he's already kind of gone through this huge struggle and overcome it, and he has just destroyed every challenge put in front of him.
Yeah.
So I think you get two guys who have come from different backgrounds as far as their development goes, and Betts also has such an amazing eye. And he's going to learn, you know, seeing these pitches, but it's not a bad place for him to learn how to do all this. It's just a little different scenario than what Bogaerts was in, where, you know, Bogaerts' first real challenge came in the majors, and it was because he came up, so, you know, he came in as a 20-year-old. So, you know, Betts get thrown in a year later, and that year might not seem like a big deal, but it is.
No, totally. It totally is.
And it's on top of, you know, Betts was drafted. Bogaerts was signed internationally, played in all these leagues, you know, elsewhere. It's kind of a different setup. So just the whole development curve is different.
So switching topics, if I can, there's two other things I wanted to hit on. One is the catching situation, but the other is just impressions of the new guys. And we talked about the starters already, so we'll exclude them from this conversation. But, you know, the Red Sox determined the offseason their offense needed, and they went out got Hanley Ramirez to play left field, and they got Pablo Sandoval to play third base. And, you know, as a Red Sox fan, maybe you can see those guys quite much, especially when they're playing in the NL West, or, you know, when worth watching by himself. So, you know, having watched these guys maybe a little bit during spring training and then, you know, past 7 games, has anything surprised you or stood out to you about their games, either offensively, defensively, anything else?
I mean, this is the kind of thing that you couldn't notice until this year because it didn't exist. But, oh, my God, Hanley is huge.
He's gigantic.
He's always been tall, but he really fills out the batter's box now that he put on all that muscle.
Is he 5? 6?
I don't know. I don't know if he's that tall.
I'm going to look it up now.
He did put on 25 pounds of muscle this offseason, though, and it makes a ton of sense that he would do that. He doesn't need to be the kind of athlete that he was at short. So now he is taking that, you know, natural athletic ability and translated into gigantic muscles, which he can murder baseballs with.
So he's 6'2", according to Baseball Reference.
Yeah, he looks a lot bigger thanks to all that muscle he's put on.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's just imposing. And that's what's really stuck out to me is you always knew Hanley had bat speed. You always knew he was a great hitter. You didn't really know him as a power hitter, though, even if he had a swing that could generate real power. But just in this little bit of time and a little bit of spring training and seeing him really hit baseballs and the sound that it makes when he hits a baseball. I mean, that grand slam he hit was a broken bat, which is amazing because it still made an amazing loud sound even though it was a broken bat.
He's almost hit 2 grand slams, as a matter of fact. That other one.
Yeah, the wind kept the other one from going out. So I think that's been the thing that's really stuck out as far as the new guys go is just Hanley isn't just switching to the outfield as far as, like, his glove goes. Like, Hanley has literally transferred his body into that of an outfielder. And I don't know if it's going to make him healthier. You know, he's had a lot of problems with little injuries and lingering things. And maybe moving to an easier defensive position and changing his whole approach to preparation will keep him on the field more often. But what I do see, what you can probably infer is he's going to hit baseballs very far.
Yes. It's interesting, too, because, you know, the obvious comparison, you know, at least by Red Sox fans to make is Manny, because, you know, big power hitter named Ramirez in left field.
Yeah, it seems kind of lazy.
Well, I mean, yeah, I don't have a huge problem with it. Obviously, they're completely different players.
Did you know that they're both Dominican?
Yeah. but watching Ramirez, the guy who he kind of reminds me of is Gary Sheffield. I mean, not necessarily the histrionics either, you know, the drama of the personality, but
the whip-like bat.
Yes, it's that.
Comes through the zone with impossible speed.
Yeah, the leg lift, and then the way the bat starts almost at his, you know, opposite shoulder, and then just is immediately, you know, whipped. I can't think of a better word than that. Whipped through the zone, And yeah, it's Sheffieldian to watch. I think.
I would buy that a lot more than the Manny. I think that the Manny thing is more a like his follow through kind of looks like that, but that's not the swing. So.
Right.
But I think people get lost in that while they're staring at him in his post baseball destruction stance.
Yeah, and you know, it's different environment, but I think it's pretty fair to say that you know, there's not a lot of hitters in baseball right now who are as good as Manny Ramirez. Is not good at Manny Ramirez, but I'm certainly optimistic that he can. And I would say I'm more optimistic having watched him, in training and you know body transformation you talked about, and watching him through these first couple games. I think there's a fair chance that he'll be he'll have one of his better offensive seasons. I don't expect him to, you know, to slug 630 like he's doing now or like he did when he was with the Dodgers for a half season that one.
I mean, he might be their best hitter at the end of the year.
It's possible. It's definitely
it's
possible.
It's not a crazy thing to say. Like, it doesn't even take a bad David Ortiz season to get there.
Right.
Hanley has had some serious runs with the bat, and the problem has always been how healthy can he stay? So,
yeah.
If he stays healthy, I mean, my only issues with signing him, and this was before he signed, is like, I don't want to pay him $100 million. I don't want to pay him to play third base.
Right.
That was like the only issue. So when the Sox were like, well, hey, it's $100 million, and I'm going to put him on the left field. And I'm like, oh, this sounds great. And then Hanley adds 25 pounds of muscle, and he's like, forget shortstop, man. I'm never playing there again.
Right.
So, yeah, if he goes out and has a huge monster season, then fantastic. They need it from him, because as much as we don't want to admit it, Ortiz won't be around forever.
Well, Ortiz has had a little bit of a rough go at first, although it seems like he's picked it up a little bit the last couple
games. He's still hitting baseballs a mile when he's hitting them. So.
Yes, he is, and I think that's the issue, is whether he's going to hit them or not. But
at least it's less of a – he doesn't need to put up an all-time season for a 39-year-old like he has done at 38, 37, 30, you know.
Yeah, right.
Going backward. He doesn't need to do that because they should have enough other help. So if David Ortiz wants to just merely be very good,
right,
there's probably room for that to work, which is – it's good that they addressed these issues with the lineup the way they did, because, you know, if they kept things the same and they just stood and they were like, okay, well, we're going to get a fill-in at third and we're just going to put – you know, we'll have Castillo, Victorino, Mookie – in the outfield, you don't have as much outfield depth,
mm-hmm.
you know, any of that kind of stuff. That kind of lineup, it'd still be good, but if he isn't Ortiz again, you've got an obvious hole. The same way last year, like Victorino getting hurt mm-hmm. and them not having anyone to replace him.
Yeah.
That's a huge loss that they just couldn't overcome. So this seems like a much better setup where they're like, we could replace David Ortiz
mm-hmm.
or we could, you know, have him for as long as he is able.
Yeah.
And also get this Hanley Ramirez guy.
Yeah.
And he'll play left field as long as he has to.
So I want to talk to you about the catching situation. But before that, I want to ask you a quick, stupid early season quiz. So by OPS, who are the best two hitters on the Red Sox?
On the Red Sox?
So obviously, sample size out the window.
That's a good question. I pay so little attention to early season stats. Is Xander one of them?
No.
Really?
Nope.
Huh.
Nava. It's not Nava. Xander's better than Nava.
Oh. Brock Holt.
Yes, Brock Holt is the first one.
Yes.
And the second one is almost as funny. Justin Masterson.
Yeah, Justin Masterson. Man, Clay Buchholz would have been number three if just one or two of those hits had gone through. He really hit the ball on the nose in Philly.
Yeah, he did.
It's kind of weird.
Yeah. Huh?
It took like a really good defensive play from Cole Hamels for him to not regret throwing that fat fastball to Buchholz.
Well, it's funny. I think, Masterson's the same way. Both of those guys are, you know, really good athletes. Like, you know, you maybe look at a guy like Wade Miley, and, you know, Miley is a good pitcher. Depending, well, I shouldn't even say it. Miley is a major league pitcher, but he's not really an amazing athlete. But Masterson,
I would say he's a good athlete. He's not a great athletic specimen, is I think the angle you're going
okay.
for here.
Okay, fair enough,
the
fair
guy
enough.
With the big ugly beard and the gut.
Right.
Yeah.
But but Buchholz was a really good hitter before he became a pitcher. And Masterson was the same way. So I think that's amusing. And should the Red Sox ever get to the World Series this year, that could be something that that would be.
Don't get ahead of yourself.
I'm way
ahead of the game or anything. Yeah,
way ahead of myself.
I've decided I really love the pitching.
World Series. I love the pitching as hitting in the World Series. That's what I love.
Skipping steps.
Yeah. So let's move on to catching. And I did a piece at BP Boston about what the Red Sox would lose just in terms of catch framing or pitch framing by dropping from Hannigan and Vasquez, or Vasquez and Hannigan, to Hannigan and Leon. A large part of that was that we just don't really know how good Sandy Leon is as a pitch framer. He just doesn't have really any kind of track record. We have a defensive reputation, which is really good. And at least early on, I'm pretty optimistic that it's a pretty good defensive catching duo. Probably better than I gave him credit for in that piece. That said, how long can they continue? And again, 7 games. How long can they continue running out 2 catchers who can't hit?
All season long.
Okay.
Which is the really simple version of that response. But let's go through the lineup just in our head. You got Mookie, who, could be, by the middle of the year, could be great. And even if he's just pretty good, that's, that's fine out of a lineup spot.
Yep.
Ortiz, Mike Napoli, Hanley Ramirez, not in any order. Hanley Ramirez, plus ball, Andrew, the 7th or 8th guy in the lineup. You have Xander Bogaerts, who is probably an above average shortstop offensively, even if he sees absolutely no growth in his game from last year, which was a disappointment, but still fine for shortstop. They can afford to carry just one black hole of a spot. And, Hannigan's going to draw walks. And he's not going to hit for power of any kind whatsoever. He's not going to hit for a high average. But it's just one lineup spot. They can afford it. Especially, the long-term benefits of keeping Blake Swihart in AAA. There's just so many. It's not just his bat. When people talk about his defensive ability, they're talking about his potential, and he's not there yet.
Right.
He really needs to work with these AAA coaches who are kind of more in tune with what's going on at the major league level than the guys at AA are. You can only pile so much information on these guys at a time.
Right.
So Swihart's got the potential to be a really great defensive catcher who is also a great offensive catcher. But even if the bat is there in the first, 2 months, the defensive side of things might not be. Now,
it's a lot to ask. It's a lot to ask for a young guy. No question.
Especially when you're saying, "Hey, come up and save our season." that's a lot to throw on a guy. Like Vasquez came up last year when the Sox were clearly, it just wasn't happening anymore. So he got a nice, more relaxed environment, and his defense was way ahead. So that was a good spot for him. Pruszynski was just such a non-factor, and the team was just going nowhere. So, yeah, give him that opportunity. Give him that chance. It's not the same situation with Swihart. They've got a really talented and deep lineup. Both of the catchers they have, neither of them can hit, but Leon does have a strong defensive reputation. Hannigan, we already know, is a really good defensive catcher. You can roll with it. Pretty much until Blake is so far ahead in his development, if that happens, it just looks bad. Why is he not doing this in the majors?
Okay, so I agree with everything that you said, for the most part, or at least not enough to argue with you about it. But let me throw this at you, okay? Here are the games played by Ryan Hannigan. I'll just go in his career. We'll start actually in 2009 with the Reds. 90, 70, 91, 112, 75, 84. And then this year, 6. Is this a guy, irrespective of offense, is this a guy who the Red Sox can depend on to start 110 to 120 games?
I don't think they even need to. If you can get Hannigan to 90 to 100, let Sandy Leon take a lot of the other ones. And then by September, you can be resting those guys a little bit. And that's when you let Swihart come up, get some time mixed in, just because things will be a little different in September, even if they're doing well. You know, unless they're really in the middle of a playoff race. But again, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. I think he can do it. And it's not like Hannigan is he's not some kid you're just really trying to protect or anything. Like, Hannigan's been around for a long time, and if they have to run him out there for 110 games, they have to run him out there for 110 games. That's what's going to happen. He's going to hit less. You know, like, what is the downside to, can you tell Hannigan is tired, or is he just Ryan Hannigan?
Well, yeah, his primary offensive skill is the defined lack of doing something. It's not swinging the bat, so... And as a matter of fact, I wanted to bring this up. He's the American League leader in walks. I was hoping it was the Major League leader. Unfortunately, Curtis Granderson has 9. Hannigan has 7. And the next guy after that is also a catcher. Alex Avila has 6. 7 walks in 22 plate appearances.
If he hits 220, but he has an on-base percentage anywhere near 300, like if it's 305, cool. Like, he's doing his job with his defense, and it's fine. Just don't be a total awful black hole from which no offense can escape. Just be bad. Be regular old bad.
Yeah. I think a 300 on-base percentage with literally nothing else is probably acceptable. And I tend to think that the overall contribution offensively, and this is excluding catcher defense, excluding pitch framing, but just from the offensive side of things, is going to be pretty close to replacement level.
Yeah, and, you know, Christian Vasquez just wasn't exactly going to tear the league up with his bat either. Like, I hate that he's hurt, because I think he could have been very useful. He might be the best defensive one of the bunch. He might have been the best hitter of the bunch, but... You know, we don't know that on either side.
Right.
Yet. He hasn't played a full major league season. We don't know how he'd hold up over a full major league season. So you don't know.
Well, that's why they got Hannigan, though.
Yeah, exactly, to help him out with that. But now Hannigan's been thrust into this first role. But, yeah, it's just, you know, with the way the pitching staff is and so much kind of depending on working well with a catcher you can trust, because so much is about getting the ball down consistently in the lower parts of the zone. You have guys who aren't really strikeout pitchers who need to be careful about doing the right thing at the right time. It's probably worth it just to keep Hannigan there, keep Sandy Leon there. If Swihart takes huge leaps and bounds at Pawtucket and is just destroying the International League, and all his coaches are raving about how quickly he has adapted to working with more experienced pitchers, cool. Like, ease him in. Get him in the mix. You know, thanks for your contribution, Sandy Leon. But I don't think there should be any reason to rush him. You know, this isn't, for a lot of reasons, this isn't a Chris Bryant situation. For one, Blake Swihart is not the best prospect in baseball. And number two, he hasn't destroyed AAA and just, you know, left it laying in ruins.
Right.
Swihart's played like 18 games there, and they were okay. And he's a catcher. So there's just a lot of stuff. If he spends the entire year there, it's not like a failure of his development. It's probably good for him in the long run. He's probably the starting catcher in 2016. But, like, let's get there. Let's let it happen organically, and the Red Sox can afford to deal with it.
Yeah. I'm a little less certain of Sandy Leon, just because there is no track record there. Just because
Well, statistically, there is no track record there, but I would say scouts are far ahead of stats still as far as understanding how good a catcher's defense is. They just don't have an exact number to put on it. But he's always had this really good reputation, and it was expected that he would be a suitable big league backup solely because of his defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm not thrilled with the idea of having him, but it was one of those things where when they got him, I was like, oh, good. That's a clear upgrade on the journeyman catcher that never should have been near the 40-man roster. It was a good little trade. It's going to be one of those things that maybe by the end of the year we'll appreciate how much worse things could have been.
Or maybe not.
Yeah, well, right. Again, it's the backup catcher, though, so.
Yes, that's true. The only thing is, like we talked about, Hannigan is older and, you know, I think there's real injury risk. There's a real downturn in you know, quality production risk.
He's older. He's not ancient.
It's a lot to put on a guy.
He's only 34.
Yeah, he's not David Ross.
Yeah.
who is, I think, 56.
A literal graybeard.
Yeah. For what it's worth, not much. Sandy Leon hit pretty well in AAA last year. Pretty well, I mean, if he hit this well in the majors, we'd call it a big win. He hit 229, 321, 371.
Yeah, which is pretty much what you were hoping for from Vasquez, you know, in the majors.
Yeah, that would have been a really good, yeah, with Vasquez's defense, that would be awesome. Yeah.
Absolutely. So I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, no, it's no big deal at all that they lost Vasquez. I just don't think what you get out of those guys is going to be so bad that you have to rush Swihart, who, again, like we talked about, this isn't his team yet. And he's gonna be working closely with guys who he is going to be pitching, who's going to be catching
right.
in the majors. You know, that AAA rotation right now has Henry Owens, Eduardo Rodriguez, Brian Johnson, Edwin Escobar once he's back from the DL, and Matt Barnes until he gets moved to the bullpen. But like right there, that is five guys that he is going to be working with in the majors most likely in the future.
Has Barnes pitched yet?
Barnes pitched last Monday night, but the game got rained out after a couple innings, suspended.
Oh, okay.
So it's being resumed later this afternoon.
Oh, okay.
So that's how it ended up. I was wondering the same thing this morning, where I'm like, wait, why is Brian Johnson pitching again? What happened to Matt Barnes?
Yeah. through two games, Blake Swihart has, two hits in 11 at-bats.
Never mind. Bring him up.
Yep. So he's
change my mind.
He's got it taken care of. Yeah, so that is that.
I saw him a lot last year, and he was good early in the season.
Yeah.
And you could see that he was very talented. There was a lot of potential there. But you could also see that he was very clearly learning. You know, he's taken in all these different plate appearances, all these pitchers, all these looks they were giving him. And he didn't really turn it on until he was a couple months into the season. So I expect kind of the same thing at AAA.
Yeah.
Which is another reason to not push him too hard, because if it takes until June for him to really hit in AAA, you want to give him a couple of weeks there, a month there, whatever, to make sure that, yeah, he actually did turn corner. And then you're going to bring him to the majors immediately, where he's going to not do well, you know, because it'll take a while for him to adjust, and you're throwing him in this important space, in this important role. I don't know. There's just a lot of reasons. If it was a different position, I don't think I'd care as much. But catcher.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think the organization is handling it properly. No question. My concern is simply the what they're going to end up getting out of the position when all is said and done from the two guys they have there. But in any case, that's about the time we have. So I want to thank everybody for listening. This has been the 123rd Over the Monster podcast. You can go to the iTunes. You can give us lots and lots of stars. We appreciate it. I'm sorry this has been kind of, a not regular feature. We're hoping to do kind of a weekly thing, but, life is life. So, anyway, for Mark, I'm Matt, and we will talk to you guys sometime in the near future, I hope. Bye. End episode. Bye.